But this year we've had the addition of a tumultuous and often rancorous political season, which has come to its culmination this week for our towns and our states, and especially for our nation. We've voiced our choices about people and propositions, and probably none of us got the first choice on every single one of them. Some of us got very few of our first choices on anything. Our nation, and probably most every one of us, is left feeling a mix of emotions. Many of us are feeling simply drained, first of all, by the sheer intensity of this election. And in the aftermath of Tuesday's results, some Americans are feeling elated, and others are feeling terrified. Some are filled with despair, and others are heartened. Some are deeply fearful for our future, and others finally feel relieved. My own emotions are still very much in turmoil. This is not the sermon that I had expected to write, but it's what is. And it's worth remembering that however this election had gone, there would still be this same mix of feelings across our country, of both betrayal and renewal, the same outpouring of both rage and rejoicing, although different people would be in different places on this spectrum. Our nation is tremendously polarized, and whichever way the election had gone, on any of the initiatives for any of the offices, many, many people would be devastated by the results. And all of this confusion and anguish we bring with us this morning. And we're also moving into a very hectic season, hectic even when there are no politics to anguish over. The round of holiday gatherings and the encounters with people who we delight in, the people who we find it very difficult to be around, and the added stresses on time and money, the expectations that rarely ever really get met. This season, for all its light and food and song, is all too often a time of stress and conflict, too. We can find ourselves keenly reminded of our loneliness, or our limitations, or our responsibilities, in ways that the holidays only heighten. So today we'll try to take time to just breathe, to enter a few moments of stillness and reflection, to remember the ground of being, that constant eternal thing which is underneath all of this, in the hope that some bit of that peace may help counterbalance the anguish of the last few days and weeks, and soothe us for the coming weeks, and above all, provide an anchor as we work for our future. We'll have a series of readings and reflections in silence, which I invite you to use for meditation, or contemplation, or prayer, or simply being present fully in this moment, and not centered in yesterday or tomorrow. The first reading offers a series of questions to help focusing inward. I invite you to shift about a bit in your seat or even in your pew and find a place that's comfortable. If you like, you can let your eyes drift a bit softer. It's up to you. The first reading is from the book Meditations of the Heart by Reverend Howard Thurman, who I'll tell you more about sometime, who writes, "How good it is to center down, to sit quietly and see one's self pass by. The streets of our minds seed with endless traffic, and our spirits resound too often with clashings and unending noises, while something deep within hungers and thirsts for the still moment and the resting world. We seek, ere the quiet passes, for some fresh sense of order in our living, a direction, a strong, sure purpose that will structure our confusion and bring meaning to our chaos. We look at ourselves in this waiting moment, the kinds of people we are, the kinds of people we want to become. And the questions persist, what are we doing with our lives, each and every one of us? What are the motives that order our days? To go, and where is your energy focus? What do you love most in life? And how do you show that love? What do you hate most in life? And to what are you true? Over and over, the questions beat in upon the waiting moment. And as we listen, floating up through all the jangling echoes of our turbulence, there is the sound of another kind, a deeper note which only the stillness of the heart makes clear. It moves directly to the core of our being, and our own answers can bubble up with the peace of the eternal. How good it is to center the love. Centering down, remembering the underlying stillness below all the jangle, whether it's the jangle of the season, or of politics, or simply the chaos of trying to get the family out of the house in the morning with clean clothes and a healthy breakfast and nothing left behind on the kitchen table. Centering down. Centering down. Another reading, also from Reverend Thurman, who was an author and a preacher and a civil rights activist, the man who started the first intentional multiracial church in our country. He wrote, "In the quietness of this place, surrounded by the all-pervading presence of the Holy, my heart whispers, keep fresh before me the moments of my high resolve, that in good times or in tempests, I may not forget that to which my life is committed." Remembering what gives your life meaning and what you are committed to, and finding ways to keep working on it is a crucial component to combating times of tempest, whatever their source. It can be daunting in the face of a long-standing rift with a loved one, or a problem that seems too complex to unravel, or even the result of an election that leaves you feeling dismissed or discouraged or worse. But the only really effective way to combat that rift with a loved one, or that massively complicated problem, or that official who holds radically different priorities, is to do something about it. Refuse to give in to despair, even when that's a strong and very present emotion. Remember what your life is committed to, what is most important to you, and don't let go of it, even when other forces seem to be undercutting it, even when the odds of success are longer than you'd expected or imagined. Life so often goes in pendulum swings, and we so often want or even expect a simple straight line forward. Keep in mind that what you are most committed to will help to ride out the pendulum and will help to swing it back again. So make a phone call to that relative you haven't talked to in years. Write a letter about a proposed change in your town. Join a movement that addresses an issue you care about. Reach out, raise your voice, stay involved in whatever the changes that you'd like to see. There will be setbacks. Remember that no matter how reasonable or essential your goals seem to you, not everyone shares your priorities, and each of those other voices is also part of the whole. But stay committed, stay active. The knowledge that you're doing something, no matter how small, will help hold hopelessness and despair at bay. Weep if you must when things get hard. Connect with others and keep doing the things that affirm your own deepest commitments. Give yourself some time to mourn when things don't go as you'd hoped, if that helps, but keep on doing what you can. In the long run, and probably even in the short run, you'll find a lot more serenity through staying engaged than in giving up, even when the road seems more difficult than you'd expected. Don't pretend the challenges don't exist, but remember that they are only part of the picture. They may make your work harder, but they don't negate it. And notice the things in life that are good, that give you comfort. The places of beauty and joy, even in hard times, where beauty and joy are always there. Patrick Murphy, a very active, longtime reader, writes, "In the deepest cave where no light seeps, where cold and damp prevail, recall your blessings. Among the blind albinos and the scuttering things that trespass against your cheek, bring back the brush of your loved one's lips. Wrapped in the fetid stench of the leavings of a million bats, recollect the warmth of bacon and eggs at sunrise. And when you are lost in the darkest maze, bring to mind each cracked and canted cement square of the sidewalk which leads you home." I would add, start walking toward home, even if you can only walk very slowly. One of my favorite poems, especially when I'm daunted or overwhelmed or just plain terrified and intended to crawl into that cave of despair, is by the Czech poet Miroslav Hola. "Go on and open the door. Maybe outside there's a tree or a wood or a garden or a magic city. Go on and open the door. Maybe a dog's rummaging. Maybe you'll see a face or an eye or a picture of a picture. Go on and open the door. If there's a fog, it will clear. Go on and open the door. Even if there's only the darkness ticking. Even if there's only the hollow wind. Even if nothing is there, go on and open the door. At least there'll be a draft." Let in a draft. Let in some light. Even if what you find when you open the door is not what you hope for. Breathe deep. And remember that still place which remains despite any outside forces or chaos, or questions or anguish. Open the door of your heart. Don't stay mired only in your pain or sadness or despair. Don't try to run away from them, but don't let them be the only things that you see. These emotions will go with you when you go through the door, but they aren't the only things there are. And as long as you stay shut inside with only those emotions, you can't affect the world around you. You probably won't have the energy to affect anything if you stay only with your pain. You'll need light and air, hope and companionship, and perspective in order to move forward. Go on, open the door. And what might you find? My colleague, the Reverend Ken Collier, writes, "There are reports. Cheap pansies awakening in trees. A whole silent band of them turning and watching as the sun rises over the forest and light fills the air. And then they begin the day. There are reports of this. Is it true?" Collier continues, "I looked at the sun this morning as dawn began to awaken. The black tide of darkness was ebbing to deep blue, and the moon was fading toward the western horizon. A few bright stars and one planet shone through the opening sky. I stopped and watched and prayed. I thought of those silent chimpanzees standing reverently in their trees, watching the sun and the light. And my heart whispered, thank you. To know you, just thank you for life. I am grateful. Thanksgiving and all the bounties and optimism that Hanukkah and Solstice and Christmas and Kwanzaa and New Year sometimes bring. And so in closing, I offer you a story, a true story from my own life. It was in a springtime about 20 years ago. I was living in San Diego and I had hit a really rough patch in life, as most of us do sooner or later. Without going into any detail, I had recently suffered several major losses and large disappointments. And I was trying to navigate some significant transitions and some difficult circumstances. There were a few crucial and complicated decisions that I had to make, and I felt way too drained to figure them out. I was overwhelmed and confused, and I felt bereft and bewildered and battered by life. So I did a perfectly logical thing. I called a trusted friend, a minister who I knew well, who lived in Los Angeles, and told him I needed to talk. I knew what I wanted, what I expected. A compassionate ear, someone to confirm that life really had been unfair and overly challenging for me recently. I wanted some real encouragement and perhaps even some good advice. So I drove off to Los Angeles, 90 minutes, even at Southern California freeway speeds, which I take full advantage of, hoping for something to lift my spirits and ease my angst. My friend listened in a very pastoral way. He said, and tell me more. And that must have been difficult. In all the right places, and I felt unburdened. He said those things enough times so that I explored nuances of my problems that I haven't even considered before, and I felt very understood and very listened to. And then he said, well, I don't usually give advice. I held my breath in delight. I get an answer. But I'll give you a suggestion, which I hope is helpful. Oh, even a suggestion from someone who understood and sympathized would be great. It takes you, what, an hour and a half to drive home, or a little longer? I nodded, puzzled. What could this possibly have to do with all of my troubles? Well, here's what I'll suggest. From the time you get safely onto the freeway, which is what, 4 or 5 minutes? And for the entire ride back to your house, I want you to say out loud everything you can think of to be grateful for in your life. Really out loud. No repeats. All the way home. Just whatever comes out of your mouth. Don't censor and pay attention to what you say for an hour and a half. Thanks for trusting me with all of this, and I'm glad you came in. Drive safely and call me tomorrow. And then he left. I wanted to punch him. I wanted to scream, to demand something more. What kind of minister listens to all of my woes and then tells me to speak of what I'm grateful for? I left, fuming and furious and even more frustrated, muttering my rage as I navigated the freeway. I turned on the radio. I blasted the radio. But I kept hearing his voice say out loud all the things you can think of to be grateful for an hour and a half. And I had gone to seek his counsel, so grudgingly I turned off the radio and started to drink tea. My daughters certainly weren't church, weren't help, weren't friends. The list was pretty standard for a few minutes. But then I remembered him saying not to think about it, not to censor, but just to say whatever came rolling up. Cooking dinner with that phone, and the smell of thyme, and the view from my kitchen window as we cooked together. The color of that new rose that I had just put in my garden, which led me to think about my grandmother who taught me to love roses, which led me to my grandfather, and I could go on for hours of gratitude towards my grandfather. After a while, I heard myself giving thanks for the ability to read, for living in a place where someone gave me books and taught me to read, for the joy of ice skating when I was a kid, for my high school chemistry teacher, for whoever it was that discovered the penicillin that meant that my daughter's pneumonia several years earlier had been cured rather than costing her life as it would have happened centuries ago. I heard myself talking about gratitude for wind and waves, gratitude for my first dog and for someone who held me when the dog got killed, gratitude for dark chocolate and the coziness of warm socks, and the people who formed my faith. Gratitude upon gratitude. I realized I was speaking a list of hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of things that I'd never thought to be thankful for, things I had taken for granted. And after a while, I found myself weeping at how blessed my life is. As I pulled into the driveway, I realized that the hour and a half of gratitude had changed exactly nothing about any of my problematic situations, and it had changed everything. The problems were still there, but they were no longer the only thing that I could see. My focus was wider. My spirit was calmer. And I saw that there was more to my life than just the challenges and despair and confusion. There always had been. I just lost sight of it. And to my surprise, that quieter and calmer place let me hear a still, small voice inside. The one that I so badly needed to hear. The one that could guide me towards some solutions and remind me of what I valued most. I felt clearer and energized, lifted up. I found myself thinking of Rilke's words, "Be patient toward all that is unsolved in your heart, and try to love the uncertainty and questions themselves, like books that are written in a very foreign tongue. Do not seek the answers which cannot be given you, because you may not be able to live them yet. And the point is to live everything. So live the questions now. Perhaps you will then gradually, without noticing it, live along to some distant day into the answer." Gratitude had somehow begun to make the questions less daunting, and my spirit more confident that the answers would emerge in their own time from that quiet voice that I had begun to hear again. Gratitude itself had become one of the answers, and it had helped bring me back to balance. I have found over time that if I try to do that exercise sitting in my bedroom, it doesn't work. After 10 minutes, I'm thinking about all the things that I can do. But driving for an hour and a half, with nothing to distract you, just letting words of gratitude roll, will change your life. It will change your spirit. Breathe these days. Stay engaged. Stay true to what it is that matters most in your life. Open the door of your heart. Don't let yourself get mired in only the hard places. Remember to notice beauty and goodness where they exist. And do something. Let your center guide you to working toward the world that you want to see. And express gratitude, which will help you to maintain balance and perspective. And somehow you and all of us will live along into a new answer. Amen. The order of service says that we will have a response time now. And it was Nancy's suggestion, and I think it's a